Welcome to the Monkeys Fighting Robots podcast with Matthew Sardo.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
Holy sh! They're actually monkeys fighting robots!
You can follow us on Twitter at monkeys_robots and on Instagram at monkeys fighting robots. Make sure to download and review our podcast from iTunes and Stitcher. And now, here's your host, Matt.
Welcome to the 119th episode of Monkeys Fighting Robots. Today's show is going to be galactic. EJ and I are hopping in our time machine and heading back to 2014. Yeah, it's like a little skip. We're going to take another look at Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1. I'm your host, Matthew Sardo. I'm also the co-founder of MonkeysFightingRobots.com. Joining me in the banter is my co-host, movie critic EJ Marino.
I promise if I have a time machine, I'm not going back to 2014. I want to go later, or we can go back to last week and redo that podcast.
Oh, everybody loved last week's podcast.
As we talked about it, it is pretty hilarious, and like the reaction was great to it, but it's like, maybe I would go back and not hear the word Star Wars again in this damn podcast. I'm not looking forward to The Last Jedi.
But we saw how many concerned fans we had after that episode came out.
Yeah, people were like, are you guys going to break up? And it's just like, no, this isn't like a Beatles thing. No one's breaking us up. We're fine. We're good.
When I wrote the time machine thing, it was supposed to be ironic about that. We're going back to 2014, because who's going to go back to 2014?
I literally, I was looking at that year in movies when I was just like, well, what else came out in 2014? And I was just like, you know what? The movies weren't that bad. Like, I guess after dealing with 2016 in film, 2014 looked like just a gold mine of like actual good content.
But we talked about our comments from last week's episode. But we probably should tell people that if you like this show, you probably should go to blogtalkradio.com and subscribe to the show and leave your comments as well, because we want to talk about them.
Yeah, I love getting comments, and then, you know, unless they're a little sassy, and then sometimes I have to be sassy back. But no, I love a good comment. So leave us some comments and maybe we won't be as angry this time. No one can be, like, worried.
I really want everybody listening to leave a sassy comment on one of EJ's articles, because, like, he gets so fired up. And for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 next Tuesday when we see it, I want him to just come in with, like, rage of, like, did you see the comments that people left on this website?
Oh, man. I don't need any more rage going into another Marvel movie.
All right, speaking about the Guardians of the Galaxy, it came out on August 1st, 2014. I saw three different press screenings in that film because they were really promoting it. There was a local press screening at the time when I was working at my other place of work, the Sports Talk Radio World, where I was like sneaking into movie screenings. But they also sent me out to a red carpet press screening in Orlando where Jimon Hanzu was there at the red carpet, and it was literally the red carpet was 10 feet long and he was the only one on it. Like, it was just
well, you know what though, that's a great move. That looks great when you're just like, me, all of this is mine, thank you.
But I got to talk to him really quick. We got a quick little interview back and forth, and it was a really exciting time because there was a lot of buzz building up with it, and they went like grassroots style with Guardians of the Galaxy to build up that buzz.
I definitely remember the buzz with it. I saw this kind of in a whole different way. I was still in film school when I saw it. So this was kind of a cool, I don't want to say a field trip in a way, but a lot of the kids from my film class, we kind of went out and saw this together. And it was a really interesting experience to like, one, be like 6 months into film school and be like, well, there's cinematography. It was just so snobby to go and kind of talk about it. It was a really fun experience. So I really, this definitely was a good time for this movie. And the whole marketing around it was just so like, how are they going to make a movie about a tree, a raccoon, and some aliens, and Chris Pratt? How is it going to work? It was just so crazy that, like, the aftermath of this and the before math, it was just crazy.
And when the first trailer came out, that song Hooked on a Feeling, they did really well with making music video trailers.
Yeah, they weren't the first, but they definitely kind of made it the new trend. I think after probably this Guardians one, everyone started doing them just because it was catchy. And, you know, I think sometimes they've now used, like, I don't really love the Justice League Come Together song, but I love the Thor song. So there's definitely some that work and some that don't. But this also made the song relevant in pop culture again, which is insane. Like, I don't even know that that song was as popular as it was when it first came out as it was after this movie.
My dad is a musician, and he basically does like an acoustic set at, you know, different bars and golf courses and poolside cabanas and stuff like that. That's what he does in his retirement. And I gave him the soundtrack to Volume 2. And I was like, if you want to be one of the cool kids this summer or like this week, start playing this song now. And then people that go see Guardians of the Galaxy next week will be like, holy shit, this guy's playing the stuff I just heard in Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, this guy's the coolest. And my dad's like, this is the oldest shit I've ever seen. Like, who's going to be listening to this stuff?
Even those are like deep cuts for your dad. He's like, I don't want to play this random Bowie song that nobody knows. Because I looked at the soundtrack and I was just like, at least with the first film, I was like, I know one, two, or, you know, maybe four or five songs. This one, I was like, I know one, maybe two going in. So it's definitely interesting that they found deeper cuts this time.
Yeah, there's a song called Lakeshore Drive. I lived in Chicago forever and drove on Lakeshore Drive. And I didn't even know there was a song about it. And then my brain like hits the next level. I was like, is this song about Lakeshore Drive or LSD?
Ooh, you know what? There was a lot of like Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds stuff like that. So maybe they were tripping on Lakeshore Drive and had a good time, you know, something like that. That would be really interesting.
It's a really...
It fits the aesthetic of this movie, though, too, man.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
One and two are both trippy, visually beautiful films.
I know that you put out your stoner list for 420. Like, where does, like, Guardians of the Galaxy, like, rank in, like, Stonerville?
You know what? That's something, you know, maybe the Marvel hater in me kind of blocks out some of these, but that would have been a really good choice for this, because this is definitely, like, with the amount of humor and the amount of visuals, this is kind of like a stoner film. It goes with my bougie, as you called it, my bougie stoner film list, where it's like, you wouldn't normally think Guardians of the Galaxy, but yeah, you know what? That's a good pick. That's going to be my late addition to that.
All right, so Guardians of the Galaxy came out August 1st, 2014, and like, just surprised everybody except for me, because I love these characters, and I read the comic books, and they had their own rebirth in the comic book world 10 years before this film came out, or maybe 5 years before, if I'm trying to figure out the dates on that. So I was super excited about the characters that they picked out for Guardians of the Galaxy. Rocket, Groot, Star-Lord was relatively... It's an older character, but they revived him up and they gave him this cool like origin kind of thing. But it was a $170 million budget for unknown characters. That's pretty impressive.
Well, that kind of goes with the... I think Marvel at this time especially was very confident. So confident that they put a group of unknowns with a $170 million budget. That was awesome. Like, even the actors where, you know, Chris Pratt was just kind of starting to get up. Like, Zoe Saldana still wasn't a huge Hollywood name. Even Batista. So, yeah, they even had unknown characters, smaller actors. This was a huge risk for them. Obviously, it paid off and became the second franchise of this MCU, but it's crazy.
And it made $333 million in the United States and $773 million worldwide with an opening weekend of $94 million. Okay, so the opening weekend in 2014 was $94 million. What do you think this film's going to make next week? Volume 2.
I don't know. It's going to be more than 94. I'm trying to think, because especially with like Fast and the Fate of the Furious having a big opening weekend, I'm trying to place it in. I think it's going to be in between that, maybe like a 100, 110. I don't know what the industry projections are, probably very high. It's one of the highest superhero films with industry projections going in, because I know Wonder Woman is very low. So yeah, I'm interested to see what this opening weekend and what their box office is going to be, because Marvel's been on an interesting roll with movies. I don't think they've hit the financial success of Avengers again, but they've kept being steady.
Beauty and the Beast made $228 million its opening weekend.
What?
Beauty and the Beast. Like, I was like, oh, I wonder what Beauty and the Beast did.
That was a little different, though, because they opened that up to all markets, I think, the same weekend.
If U.S. We're just U.S.
That's crazy. But Disney and Beauty and the Beast, I think, will always have a bigger following than Marvel / Guardians of the Galaxy. But I don't know. That's crazy. If only I could make that much money in a weekend.
Oh, you could. You just have to do some really weird shit.
you know, new career path. Sorry, Matt. I'm leaving the podcast. I'm doing whatever ping pong Mexico events that I need to.
I feel like you need to go to Europe to make the big bucks. I think if you're going to Mexico, you're only going to be making pesos when it comes to crazy shit on the weekend. But if you go up there and like that Belgian territory up that way.
Yeah, but I like the idea of people throwing pesos at me more than like the euro. Like something about pesos being thrown at me is dirtier. I like that.
Okay. You're not going to make $228 million in a weekend.
Not in Mexico, no.
You're going to make Belco experiment money.
Wow. That Belco. God, even that more James Gunn shade. We're trying to be nice to him on this podcast.
The Fate of the Furious made $124 million, almost $125 million in their opening weekend. And I think Guardians is going to break that. I'm going to go with 130. It's my
fault. Okay, now that you've kind of put it into like more of like a scale, I will probably say I'm going to maybe give it to what Fate of the Furious was. I don't think it'd beat it. I don't know. Especially not globally, because those Fate of the Furious movies do nasty overseas. This one probably will too, but yeah, I'm going to put it maybe at 120, 125.
This Guardians of the Galaxy does star Vin Diesel.
Damn. Yeah, but not – they like physical Vin Diesel in China. Like, they like to see him. Like, as much as, like, the I Am Groot works, they like to see their Vin Diesel to give him money.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I was like, how does this guy make $2 billion – like in less than 6 months and out of two films coming out? That's gonna be insane.
And you know, I did a Facebook post about that, and like even going down to Guardians of the Galaxy, Vin Diesel is a name in this industry that people are gonna be like, they're gonna take forever to give him respect. But like you said, he just made this much money in 6 months off one franchise and one like the Fate of the Furious level franchise. Like
whoa, I thought the was for Fate of the Furious.
Oh, look, I like XXX, but, like, come on. Like, that's not the scale of what they're trying to do on the Fate of the Furious. Like, I just think it's so crazy. Now with this, he's going to bank this year. Vin Diesel is going to sit very nicely. I want to know what his contracts are like, of how much he gets the percentage off, because he's not, like, producing Guardians. But still, this was a good year for Vin.
It just started. The year just started.
Yeah, because this is only just so crazy.
Whoa. You know what this means? So if he has Guardians and he has Fate of the Furious making $2 billion, that means that we're going to get Witch Hunter 2.
You know what? Maybe he can finally make his Dungeons and Dragons movie he's been trying to make for years. That's why I like him. It's like he's not even a closet nerd. He's very open about how nerdy he is. And it's like, here's all the things I like. Just now we can do it. You know what? That's the best thing, is that we're bankrolling like Last Witch Hunter 2 and Dungeons and Dragons this year.
But the only problem with Vin Diesel is if he makes a Dungeons and Dragons film, he wants to be the magician, not the warrior. And I'm just like, ugh.
Let him, though. Like, it's gonna be his film. That's gonna be one of those things where, like, I don't want to hear him say like magic babble, which is like a problem I have with some people in the first Guardians. Even it's like, I don't think you should be talking all this space mumbo jumbo. But well, it'd be interesting to see Vin Diesel's career after 2017, because he'll do really well.
We need to bug Vin Diesel to get on the Thundercats bandwagon. Like, he's Pumra. He's the mechanic in Thundercats.
Physically, like, that's good casting. That whole rest of the cast, that'd be interesting how that pans out. Yeah, let's get from that. Like, let's just, like, subliminally, like, inception him with that idea, like, Thundercats. Like, every time someone sees him, just like, Thundercats. Thank you.
Well, he's gotta be on Twitter. We just gotta just keep, at once a week, whisper, Thundercats movie, make it happen. Come on, Vin. Thanks a lot.
No, you're the only one.
Because my one buddy, Paolo, who's a bartender in Chicago, and I think he went through like Argentina this past weekend to go research wines for his bar. It's a rough job. But it's at least once a month that we're like, hey, he asked me, like, what's up with the Thundercats movie? And I was like, I got no news for you yet. Like, he bugs me all the time about a Thundercats movie. Oh, I really want one. I think that'd be awesome.
You know, with like stuff like Guardians of the Galaxy, that like really weird, obscure Marvel picks getting things, Thundercats was a pretty decent 80s success. I think it could find life again.
You know what we're doing is we're talking about everything except Guardians of the Galaxy, the movie that we watched last night and we watched in 2014. For me, I couldn't believe how well-paced the film is. Like, it's the shortest two-hour movie I've ever watched.
It is pretty brisk. I was very impressed, too, because I feel like some of their movies have a weird middle act that, like, I'm like, okay, let's just get to the ending, where this one I was just like, oh, I could have dealt with more of the middle. Like, it for 2 hours, I was just like, with this pacing, you could have made this 2:30 and I would have not noticed.
And is that due to the pacing, or is that due to the fact that, like, I could have as much Rocket or Groot as possible? Like, there's a lot of good characters in there, and they're all bouncing off of each other, and so you don't feel, like, is it the fact that it's well-paced? Because I almost want to go back and, like, time it, like, how much they spent in each area, because the movie's 2 hours long, and, like, you have the orb, you go to Xandar, you have the prison, you go to nowhere, there's the plan, there's the final battle. So they're only spending, like, 15 to 20 minutes in each little plot point, and so that's a really quick time. It's almost, you know, like a commercial break kind of thing when you get done with it. You're like, oh, okay. Or is it the fact that, like, all these characters are so rich where you're like, if I could just see Rocket build shit, I'd be entertained.
It's what happens when you make a good film. It's everything comes together. It's the writing was nice. The way it was edited was nice. The characters that the director is crafting and the energy they're giving. This is just what happens when you make a good film. It's brisk. It's, unless you're trying to make a movie that feels like you're in there for eternity, all movies should be like this. You should watch a 2-hour movie and be like, that was the easiest 2 hours I've ever had.
Yeah, but we don't.
No. The rarity of that happens. And, you know, not to say all movies that are, you know, that feel like they drag are bad, but, you know, this is how this should be done, where, like, you're giving me 2 hours, and especially an action adventure film, it should feel nice. I don't think an action movie should drag, and it doesn't.
No, I would have to say, if I had to give it a name, it has, like, Indiana Jones pacing, where you're going from one adventure to another adventure to another adventure.
And it's something hit or miss. I've seen a complaint even with some of the early reviews, is sometimes these movies do, you know, the Guardians movies do kind of just give you a lot of, well, here's a set piece, here's a set piece, here's a set piece, where sometimes you get, I don't think these movies have much heart in them. And that's what I want to see changed with the newer film, because this one, at least 2014, didn't give me that much.
So you don't think that the first Guardians movie has a lot of heart?
No, and I think it's because of that pace you mentioned. I don't think it really allows for that. The intro with Star-Lord's mom is just really powerful, kind of the slowest moment of the film, but it's purposely done that way. And it's like, oh, that's cool. And then for there, I don't care about the Nebula, like Gamora, like sisterly battle over their dad. Maybe the Rocket scene where he's drunk and really upset about being created. That's probably the only heart I really get throughout the film.
Okay, because right before that, like when they're in prison, they give him the shower, they do a nice close up of where he's been like beat up and stuff like that. And that was
the first seed for that scene later on that really is, I think, the heart of this film is Rocket.
Yeah, because they build it up like when the Nova Corps scan him, they're like, oh, this is Rocket. He's like an amalgamation or whatever the fuck he is. And then, you know, they show him in the shower, he's just kind of like beat down in the shower, and then you see all the stuff where they did surgery on him, and then he gets drunk and he's like, I hate you guys. And I love the fact that he doesn't know he's a raccoon.
I love that too, because he's the only character I went into knowing. He was always in the Marvel versus Street Fighter games.
Okay.
And I was always like, who is this little raccoon with his bazooka? Loved him. So he was the only one I had reference for, but I didn't know that the raccoon character would have gave me he doesn't know he's a raccoon, he doesn't know why he's created. I was just like, I expected this from the Star-Lord character. How is it Bradley Cooper / Sean Gunn delivering this amazing performance?
And then I feel like, and this is, I mean, the comic books are pretty formulaic and stereotypical as well, but the cast is very stereotypical cast. You know, you got the main character, the Han Solo type character, and then you have like Drax, who's like doesn't get the joke, so he's like the straight guy, you know, who just.
Well, it's easy to compare him. Each one of them is a member of the Avengers. Like, Star-Lord is the out of place Captain America. Drax is the Thor who doesn't really get our jokes, so that makes him funny. Gamora's Black Widow. Rocket is the drunk kind of douchebaggy Tony Stark, and then Groot is Hulk. Like, that's why these characters are so stereotypical, is we literally saw them in the Avengers, you know, 2 years before. So not that I think that's a fault. I think if you're going to steal, you're going to steal from yourself. Like, cool, thank you. I'm going to take my awesome idea and redo my own awesome idea. So that's where I think these characters are a little stereotypes, but I don't mind the stereotypes, especially within this film.
Right. And it's good to kind of talk with you to be a person who's outside of my bubble of the comic book world, because I saw this whole group put together way before the Avengers films. They put together like three or four really good books that I read. And, you know, Groot gets killed in that one. And I remember in the comics, I was like, oh, they just fucking blew up Groot. And that was the first time I saw Groot die. And then I was like, next, you know, the next book, they're like, oh, Rocket's trying to regrow Groot. Oh, hopefully he comes back. You know, like, that's where, like, so I was kind of disappointed in the first film when they kind of did that right away, where they killed him. Because, like, if you were going to have three movies, if you kill him the second one, like, you know, because everybody kind of survived kind of thing.
I said if they would have at least killed him at the end of this and not shown as much as we talked about little baby Groot, and that is adorable and became a marketing little genius with his little hula dance in that pot. I just wish that was saved until volume two, where it would have been like, oh my God, are we going to see Groot again? Because honestly, unless you were 8 years old, no one believed Groot was dead.
Right. But in my mind, I never put a correlation between the Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy. And that could be like my blind eye towards like comic book reading. But like, I've read enough Captain America and I've read enough Star-Lord where I'm just like, those guys are the farthest from, you know, but in space, he's out of place. So I get all the correlations and I get all the stuff. It's interesting.
And I'm not even saying in a comic book sense. It's just the cinematic versions of these
right.
characters.
No, that's what I'm talking about. It's like you come at it from a cinematic angle where I come at it from the comic book angle. And I was like, oh, I've never really thought about it like that. But it makes sense. And it makes sense from like a marketing and a business point of view. It's like, okay, Avengers works. Let's make Avengers 2.0, which is Guardians of the Galaxy.
And that's what I'm very curious to see when we get all of the Justice League together. If they're going to follow this Marvel formula,
because
I'm curious to see who's going to be the Hulk / Groot character, who's going to be this character. That's what I'm really intrigued by. Because they're like, how much of these team-based, because Suicide Squad definitely did not have this formula. Maybe that's why they failed so bad. But this is definitely, I want to see if this Guardian / Avengers group dynamic is the new team dynamic.
And you meant Avengers, not Justice League, right?
Yes.
Okay. Just want to make sure all the nerds know what we're talking about. And you hate the hero's journey, and that's all this film is.
Oh, no, trust me. That's one of the minor faults with it, but I think it
How
works.
Is that a minor fault?
Just for me, it's something I don't personally particularly like in these films. I think it works because a lot of the characters should have room to grow, but the ones who do, I think, are the most is Rocket. Like, I think Rocket has the best hero's journey, because I don't like the Star-Lord progression from him being like such a tool in the beginning to like, oh, look how nice he is. There's something missing in that middle where I was just like, well, I didn't see that transition. You just gave me the transition. So that's, you know, I don't really like the hero's journey of all of them. So maybe that's why I didn't didn't notice it, because I'm like, well, like Gamora, what the hell is her hero's journey?
Well, she was always the evil one, but she has to take out her sister.
Like, and that was something I didn't like in this film either. It's like, she's the worst hit woman I've ever seen. Like, her whole introduction, I'm like, she was never meant to be the evil one. Like, I didn't really get that from her. So that's why her arc didn't feel as complete. Like, you know, as much as I love the stuff, because I love Thanos in this film, I probably, like, going back, that's my favorite, like, singular scene, I think. Just a quick one, I really like that Thanos scene.
Where he's talking to Ronan?
Yeah, I just something about like him floating on the chair. That's what they should have done earlier in a post-credit scene. It's something like this. I would have loved that.
Yeah, I still don't understand the whole... I mean, I understand what they're going to be doing, but that's where I always thought Thanos was kind of like this, like... I don't know, the way they set him up is just awkward. And I don't know...
That he's having people do things for him?
Kind of, well, not, I mean, like, this stuff is all over the place, but they're not really, like, this is the first time where you see Thanos being like, hey, Ronan, go get me this thing, you know? But if you're supposed to be this all-powerful being, like, why are you, like, using a whiny bitch to go get you something. And like, you even call him a whiny bitch. So, I mean, like,
because it's very interesting is I think everyone has the I thought the idea of Thanos was going to be this like, because I come from the DC side where Darkseid is the most terrifying thing I've ever seen, where Thanos, to find out that, like, not to spoil the Infinity Gauntlet saga, from what I know the comics, he does this to impress Death. Like, the Thanos character isn't this most smart, military, evil-minded, mad genius that I think he is. And maybe that's what I kind of like, that he is kind of a whiny bitch. Out of any character, he's supposed to be this monstrous thing. And he's like, well, I kind of want to impress these girls with my nice, like, gauntlet of rings of stones and stuff like that. I'm like, I don't know, his character's interesting. It's not the typical big bad you would think.
Well, this is where it gets kind of weird. Like, how do you show that on screen when you start getting into that like heavy meta where it's like, oh, I have to destroy worlds to impress Death, and like, what is Death? You know, like, it's like once you start talking about Death and then you start getting into the other celestial beings of all that kind of metaphysical, like, crazy cosmic shit, like, how do you...
They touched on a lot in Guardians, though.
They do.
I remember that with the collector scene was one of the most... That was probably one of the heaviest nerdy, like, Marvel things. They usually don't dig deep into, like, well, here's a bunch of comic book shit no one's gonna know, and that's why I was like, well, good job, like, the celestial beings. I'm like, I didn't know, and that's supposedly what Hela's character is in Thor Ragnarok, is she's replacing the Death character.
Yeah, and that will kind of retcon... kind of the world.
So that's what I'm interested is, like, this is the first, maybe this phase of Marvel's the first time, because maybe things are finally happening, that I'm like, okay, how are we getting to the point? Like, they've done, even going looking at Guardians, is like, they've been building up to something without giving us a lot, though.
Right, because, like, then you have in, like, the Thor universe, you have, like, the seven worlds or seven kingdoms, yes, or however way, like, they want to do it. So, I
like
mean, like,
Game of Thrones reference.
I know. I was like, because it all gets all confused in the head. If you're a big nerd, like, you got Lord of the Rings shit floating around in your head. Like, you know, Asgardian shit.
Yeah, I'm
shit,
like, where is Asgard and where is, like, Middle Earth?
Right.
Like, are they the same thing? Because they kind of sometimes even blend into each other.
So then you have, like, the cosmic world, and, like, okay, so you have the cosmic world, which is the cosmos, which I think, like, Earth lives in, and then you have the different realities of the Thor world, yet they're going to come together in some fashion?
I think this is probably way easier for fans who are just the cinematic fans of the MCU, because they've given you, now that we both have somewhat knowledge of what's supposed to happen, we're like, mapping it out, and you're like, okay, here is a point A to point B. How do we get to B? Like, there's so much in between that they really haven't done, but that we're just kind of just assuming that they're doing.
And this conversation that we're having right now is, like, one of my bullet points, because we were talking about this. James Gunn did well balancing out, like, the source material with his cinematic vision. Like, we've got a lot of nerdy, heavy shit in that film that we don't necessarily get in other MCU films.
And because he touched on stuff that he personally, I think, found from the Marvel universe, where, like, I think he likes The Collector, where he's not a big Thanos fan, and he's talked about not including Thanos in Volume 2 because he's just like, I don't like the character, where he likes characters like The Collector. He even likes Howard the Duck enough to throw him in as the post-credit scene. Like, it's very interesting of what he put in that, what he liked. I personally felt I didn't see James Gunn as a filmmaker in this a lot, where in Volume 2, just that scene you see in the trailer where Drax is, like, chopping at the monster from inside and it's all bloody and gooey and stuff, that's James Gunn. So that's where I'm like, I missed something like that in this movie, where I was like, Volume 1 just didn't have that James Gunn touch, but he did do well out of any of the directors balancing what Marvel wanted and what he wanted. And that's why he's still here. And we've lost almost every director Marvel has other than the Russo brothers.
And this could be like a little Sam Raimi thing where, like, Sam Raimi followed orders for Spider-Man 1, but then Spider-Man 2, you get that, like, vicious Sam Raimi, Dr. Octopus tentacle death scene, which you're like, this is vintage horror from Sam Raimi because he followed the line the first one, and maybe they gave him some slack in the next one because you could have just put Bruce Campbell in the room when the tentacles are killing everybody, and, like, he could have fought it, and it would have been amazing. Like, it would have been straight out of Evil Dead. I don't know what we're going to get. Maybe that slither scene is going to be when Drax jumps into the giant slithering monster.
Well, that was, and that's how I knew I was, it was going into that, where I was just like, as soon as I saw that, I was like, it's funny, it's gross, it's everything James Gunn is, where I didn't get that in Volume 1, where I just saw the Belko experiment earlier this year, and he wrote that, and it's so James Gunn. Like, it's like, this feels like, yes, the humor of Guardians is kind of James Gunn-y, but I was missing that, like, grossness, and I think Volume 2 is going to be where, I've noticed, though, this has an 85% on Rotten Tomatoes. Volume 1 has a 91. It's very interesting, though, that I think he's going to get more James Gunn and scare off some people. And I kind of like that, actually. I think that's why I have more faith going into Volume 2 than I have most MCU films, because I don't know. I think this is James Gunn going to be like you said, a Sam Raimi, like, oh, you guys gave me the wheel. That's cool. I'm driving this off the mountain.
Let's see. Well, this is where we have to figure out what's going on with Rotten Tomatoes, because it's really easy to, when you're dealing with Rotten Tomatoes, like, they don't ever tell you things that, like, they don't compare things apples to apples.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you try to go through and
ooh, I'm glad you said apples to apples, because apples to oranges pisses me off. Because why can't you compare fruit? I don't get that. Thank you for saying apples to apples, because you can compare the same damn thing.
Right. Yeah, you can compare. So right now, Volume 2 is sitting at 85%, and it had 59 reviews right now. So that's where that Guardian has 59 reviews, and Guardians of the Galaxy, the original.
I think it's at 91.
How many reviews it had?
No, I think the percentage is 91.
Right, and so that's the thing. But my thing is the amount of reviewers that have, like...
Yes, you could break it down in the more statistical way, but just the face value of both those numbers, and 91% of critics liked it, where these 85 so far. You know, that's what I'm just saying, at the face value of it. It's very interesting to see the initial reaction. It's just a little lower, where sequels sometimes in the superhero world have gone up.
Okay. I finally got the number. 288 people reviewed Rotten Tomatoes, or reviewed Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one.
That's a lot of reviews just in general.
Right, so 91% of them thought it was fresh. Right now, we're only at 59 reviews for Guardians of the Galaxy right now. And those 9 people that didn't like the film could be the only people. You know, let's see who are the rotten douchebags.
Hollywood Reporter is on it.
So Brian Bishop of The Verge, Maria from Us Weekly. Oh, Donald Clark from The Irish Times. I really judge his, really follow his work.
See, this is so unfair to go to these things and be like, oh, look at these 9 douchebags. Like, that's where I'm like, you could tell you're a fan of the Marvel films more.
No, I would say this for the DC films, too. Like, if the guy from Forbes bashes Justice League, of course he's going to fucking bash Justice League, because he works at Forbes. Like, it's just, like, that's not a place that's going to be a good critic for the DCU or DCEU or superhero film. Like, I'm not.
Well, I would say we talk about this a lot. I think certain people should be reviewing IGN. I will take their Guardians of the Galaxy review more than I would take a Forbes review of it.
Yeah.
Like, not to discredit anyone's job. That's what you do. But personally, that's why, as a critic, I don't look at other critics. I don't particularly care.
No, but when the negative reviews are coming from Us Weekly, Irish Times, Forbes, and Time Magazine, and New York Magazine, like, I'm not really, like, those aren't anybody that, like, I would be like, oh, I really respect your opinion on superhero films.
Yes, but at the same time, I bet you most of those gave a positive review for the first one.
I guess I can check. I mean, I can see. Well, you know, I can find out who the 25 douchebags were for Guardians of the Galaxy.
And I don't think it'd be the same ones. I definitely think this one is so, from what I've heard, is really different, and I like that, though.
No, Us Weekly, she didn't like it. So there's one. Time Magazine didn't like it in 2004. Okay.
Good job, Time.
Oh, that's interesting. The Chicago Reader didn't like Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, that's more of an indie kind of thing. It's really interesting to see who didn't like the first one, The Straight Times in Singapore. He didn't like it.
Because honestly, if I was reviewing at that time, I would have probably gave it a decently positive review.
Yeah, like the San Diego Reader, a 1 out of 5. That was their original score.
And there's even at my most hate of MCU, that movie's on a 1 out of 5. Like, I don't think is a flawless piece that some people want it to be. I think that it goes to the MCU's Winter Soldier of 2014. But
Kyle Smith on the New York Post, he said, Guardians of the Galaxy brings to mind some of the most unforgettable sci-fi event movies of the last 30 years. Alas, those films are Howard the Duck and Green Lantern.
Okay, one, Howard the Duck is flawless. He can go to hell.
Right. I was like, one, you probably weren't alive and saw that in a movie. Not that you like you have to be, but like,
no.
My ass went to that theater and saw Howard the Duck in the theater and was like, yeah, you go get that girl from Back to the Future, Howard.
You know, I will say to go on, I'm glad you brought up this review of 2014. I don't think the sci-fi action sequences are that memorable from the first Guardians of the Galaxy. I had to be reminded that Ronan and Drax even fought. I had to be reminded now rewatching it that the Nebula Gamora kind of spaceship battle. Uh-huh. I remember the end. I remember the orb stealing scene or the prison scene. But there was a lot in between that I don't remember the action segments. Maybe that's James Gunn not particularly caring about them as much. It's funny you brought up that review and I'm like, hey, that's probably one of the only other complaints is I don't particularly care for the action moments of this, especially that final battle dance scene annoys me to hell.
You know, it didn't annoy me this time around. Like, years removed from it, I was like, because when I first saw it, I was really annoyed by the dance scene. I was like, is this how you're ending the film with the dance scene? And I was like, you got to be fucking kidding me. And then, like, just watching it, you know, brainlessly last night and letting it just settle, I was like, okay, I like, what else would he do at that point in time fighting? I was trying to think of what else he would be doing being Star-Lord, being that character. Like, you know, he is, because they all give the nod. Like, if you watch the scene, they all give the nods to each other that Rocket is working on something.
Yeah.
Like, he sees it, then they give the nods, and the nods make it around. And I was just like, okay, what is he going to do to distract Ronan? And I'm like, okay, what could he have done? Like, it would have been funny. I'm trying to think of like what else he could have done.
Maybe what he did to Yondu, where if he give, oh no, he has the orb already. Because I was gonna say, well, maybe if he would have gave him that little thing with the troll doll, and then he would have been like, well, what the hell is this? And then they would have done the rocket scene. Because I don't mind the scene where they all grab hands, and that seems interesting. I don't like what we got to there. I was just like, the dance, it's so cringy where it's a final act problem. We talk about this. I think the podcast should be called We Hate Final Acts in Hollywood Movies because we hate them. And that was my problem where I'm like, that was the weird way to end that movie. Same thing though. I just gave so much praise to Winter Soldier. I hate that final act though. I'm like, I don't need that spaceship battle. Like, just give me Robert Redford.
No, but with Guardian, like what would you have liked him to do to slow down Ronan the Accuser with the Infinity Gem? Like, sock puppets? Miming? Like,
no, the dancing works for the character. I think if I step back at it and look at it like cinematically, I'm like, that's dumb. But if you look at it for the Guardians of the Galaxy character, it works 100%.
Right. Because I think I definitely think I enjoyed it more this time, because the first time I was like, oh my God, this is so dumb. So then I missed the little nuances, like when he tries to throw it to Gamora and Gamora's like, I don't know what the fuck you're doing. He's like, I'll take it back. Like, there's little details in it that work better when you're just not like annoyed the first time. And cause you know how I like to rewrite scripts and stuff like that. I've been racking my brain of like, okay, what would I have done differently? And the only thing I come up with is like some sort of like sock puppet where like there's some sort of like stupid, but it's still a stupid distraction. Like, you need a stupid distraction. So, and they picked out this stupid distraction.
Yeah, it definitely works the best for, like I said, the character. It makes sense. It's still so odd, and I think it almost deflates, like, because I think that's why you probably didn't like it the first time. It's like, you're building up, you're like, oh man, what's happening? And then it's just like, dance break. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's cute.
Right, because I think it takes away from Groot's death.
Yes.
And so that's
It takes away from that awesome, really heartfelt moment before, I mean, right after, where they all grab hands and this is like, look, we can all come together and do this, even with little stick version of Groot in Rocket's hand. The whole team's there. I love that scene. I think that's so cute and so, like, so that's probably one of the only other heartfelt moments as well. And I do think it kind of gets undercut by the scene before it.
Right. And but then it leads to questions because then, like, once Peter Quill gets the Infinity Stone, like, he doesn't melt like anybody else, and you're like, okay, who is he? Like, who's his parent? And then, like, they've kind of revealed it's Kurt Russell, but it's like, what was the deal with Yondu? And then I haven't even talked about Yondu. Like, that's where I talked about, like, James Gunn did well balancing the source material, because Yondu is one of the original Guardians of the Galaxy members from, like, the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and they even had, like, a weak series in the 90s, but then they created a new Guardians of the Galaxy in the aughts, and that's where, like, Star-Lord comes in. So, like, to have a callback to the original team, and now it looks like Yondu's on this team now, works well.
Oh, I love Yondu. I love, like, Michael Rooker. Like, great casting there. And it's he's a staple in James Gunn movies, too, as well. He was in Slither as a main character. So it's funny that he did bring some of his stuff in. So, yeah, it's cool. It's interesting. I like the inclusion of Michael Rooker, especially Sean Gunn with Michael Rooker. I loved his character as well. I thought his, like, two lines in that movie were kind of funny, and I want to see him grow because he is hilarious in the Belko experiment. Sean Gunn is, I think, my favorite character when he was in that. So I wonder to see if he gives him a bigger role in Volume 2, because I think he can handle it.
I think he can, too. I mean, that's why he keeps him around. I mean, like, it's...
Yeah, I'm tired of Hollywood nepotism, but sometimes it works well in that sense.
But just going back to the film and continuity and stuff like that, like, I wish they would have said, like, Ronan destroyed the Nova Corps. Like, the Nova Corps was gone at the end of it. Like, when they make that chain link fence kind of thing, the hold the plane, and, like, and it explodes. And I wanted, like, Glenn Close to be like, and the Nova Corps is gone and we have to rebuild. Because then that would have introduced... You could have introduced a human Nova Corps character coming over. You know, like, it would, that would have... What?
So basically just Nova?
Yeah, like Reed Richards, Nova. That's my guy. There's the Jim Loeb, Jonathan Loeb, Steve Loeb, Lisa Loeb.
I was trying to think of the joke for them. Like, oh, Lisa Loeb. Aw.
No, but Jeff Loeb. I think it's Jeff Loeb. It's got to be Jeff. I said too many Loebs at this point. But his son died of cancer, which is really sad and depressing. And then they created a Nova character that is his son. And he replaced Richard Rider. And so he's like a 15-year-old kid that's the Nova now.
You know, that's actually... kind of like the stories behind it's really like awesome, but that would be really interesting in the film. It would continue the look how much the Avengers and Guardians are like with now we have a 15-year-old helping us out like we do with Spider-Man.
Oh God, you take it to that negative note right away.
No, I'm just saying it's just like literally would be so funny. I'm just like they're just redoing them, but in space because they are the Space Avengers. As I think that's the joke about them is. Literally, it's just Space Avengers. I just happen to like Space Avengers more than real Avengers.
Well, they're more sarcastic and they have looser morals.
Yes, and it fits that fits what I like as a cinema goer. So yeah, wow, you just put it in the most like flat out simple sense of why I like one more than the other. Good job, wow! Like you just cut me deep there.
Well, I wasn't. The next level is like, you know, is Sean Gunn trashy enough for you?
Oh, well, especially in Guardians. Like, that is, I'm like, he has like one gold tooth, his hair's messed up. I'm like, well, yeah, you have a couple space felonies. Like, I'm down. Though, going to my other weird crushes, I would probably date Rocket Raccoon. Like, given the chance, he's probably the best guy in that space universe. He's so sweet, but also kind of a dick. I like him.
Yeah, but his drunk benders remind me of an ex-girlfriend, so I don't know if I can handle that.
Does Rocket ever, like, date anybody in the universe?
Squirrel Girl? Squirrel Girl?
Shut the hell up.
No, I'm kidding.
Like that is my OTP. Like, that is the greatest pairing in the Marvel universe. It's, like, she just throws him a nut. Never mind. I'm not going to finish that joke.
Oh, I'm not even going down this dark path. But what
no.
It's getting dark and dank really quick.
Yeah, we should get out of the Squirrel Girl Rocket Raccoon love fest.
But we are talking way too much about Guardians of the Galaxy, but it's fine. But one of the things that I like about this film is because you've introduced all these characters. You got all these characters, and it could be really bogged down quickly. But the film is fast-paced, And then they give you little tidbits about everybody's origin as it goes along. And you have to pay attention to that stuff and keep an eye on it. So I feel like the film treats the audience like they're smarter than the average bear.
Oh, they do, and they don't like shove the MCU stuff into it. They do really well of just giving you the story without having to be like, well, this is the connection to the Marvel world, or this is the connection that each one. No, they're just like, here, you can tell a simple story. You're not that dumb. And yeah, they definitely do. I think even in a sense where younger kids can get it, I think this just works on a writing and direction level. It speaks to so many people, which is why I think it did so well.
And then since we're talking about like stereotypes of films and things that are going on, like now I'm worried about Volume 2 because they have a baby in it.
They do. Oh, yeah. That's,
I was like,
that's,
damn it, sequel.
That's the sequel curse, is throwing a baby in. Though it helped Fate of the Furious. That didn't hurt it, that awesome baby. So.
Oh, no, 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 no. That's the thing is, if you throw the baby in the eighth film, you're fine. But if it's in the second film or third film, we're like, people start to get married and have kids, or like, at least we're not going, I mean, again, this is me just being a horrible person, but like, because I'm sure somebody wants to see this, but at least we're not seeing Gamora pregnant and fighting in this one.
That's something I'm very fearful, is how they're going to do their love romance, because I kind of like that it wasn't forced within Volume 1. Where 2, I'm like, I don't want to deal. I just don't want to take a break for love drama. It's what I don't like about the new Star Trek with the Uhura and Spock stuff. I was like, I don't care. Like, this doesn't need to be here. That's why I'm worried with Gamora. Oh my god,
no
the
love.
Same person
no,
too.
No, no love story. No love story needed at all in this film.
The flirtation's fine. Because that's just Star Lord being a character of like, well, yeah, I like to flirt, and I get that. Even if she flirts back, I don't need it. That's sequel problems, that we have the baby, we don't need the unnecessary love story.
No, because it could prolong forever. Like, it's okay if you have millions and millions of people shipping Gamora and Star-Lord.
And that's so much better than sometimes paying it off. I'm a fan of The Office. I liked the Pam and Jim before they got together more than when they got together. And I think that's just what Guardians needs to stay in, that level of like the Ross and Rachel, like, ooh, will they, won't they? That's more fun than, oh, well, they did.
Yeah, because then when they get together, like, the guys are like, ah, oh, Pam is such a nag.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happens. It stops being cute and then becomes a real relationship. And I don't think these films need it, especially because the MCU doesn't really do well with relationships. Don't try it now.
I am so excited Sylvester Stallone is in this film, though.
I'm very excited. I was very excited when I saw Glenn Close in the first Guardians and she didn't do anything. So that's what I'm a little worried with the Sylvester Stallone casting, is will he be that role of like, well, he's just here. I want him to play Nova because I want him to play Judge Dredd again. So I just want
you want the mask?
I just want him in a mask again. I just, something about that I like. So yeah, that's what I want.
That would be good. I'm trying to think of who else. Is there any other
Guardians character I know basically that's not really there? It's like Adam Warlock and Nova are the only two characters that I know that aren't there yet.
Well, they're showing the Adam Warlock's like race.
Well, because they showed his cocoon.
Well, they show his cocoon, but his race is, they show all those gold people are Adam Warlock people. This is me being scientific with the MCU and the names of it, because they change the names for the comic book sometimes. You know, they don't talk about scrolls.
With the Kree and the scroll and all that, like that was something. I didn't need the Kree drama in this with Ronan. That's sort of things that I didn't like in the first Guardians of the Galaxy. I want to see taken out and replaced in Volume 2. So I'm more excited about this than I thought I would be, especially now after rewatching. One, I thought I was going to hate it because I'm in like a post Chris Pratt honeymoon phase. So no, I still enjoyed it. And I'm curious now and more excited for Volume 2.
Well, they had to introduce the Kree, because I'm almost positive that Carol Danvers is taken by the Kree and they make her Captain Marvel. There's some sort of,
which the more things they need to do is start connecting Earth and space, and that's a good way of doing it.
Looking through all this stuff that she's done, and they just don't explain. They just need to have a quick, just has to be bright letters that says origin, and then you read it and it goes.
Sometimes if you're on Wiki, the right side under her photo will give you origin and like nationality and all that stuff.
Yeah. I'll have to do some more research. And we can, I mean, we have plenty of time to talk about Carol Danvers and Brie Larson and Captain Marvel and all that fun stuff.
It's not the casting film I wanted, but that's going to be one I'm looking
for. They got it right.
To.
It's a girl.
Well, yeah, the gender's right, and they got half a female director. Like, they got a director duo. One of them's a girl, so yay for that. But we'll see. I want to see how Wonder Woman goes with female direction in the superhero world to see what my anticipation for Captain Marvel is going to be.
You know, TM is really worried about Wonder Woman. TM Powell from CW44, he's like, this is going to be a shit-tastic movie.
I mean, a lot of people have been saying that, and I don't know how they can. I don't think one trailer has given me the indication of that. And this is just me trying to step away from just being a Marvel fan. Maybe it's because I'm a DC fan where I'm just a Wonder Woman fan. And I'm like, that trench scene's going to be good. She's fighting Ares. Like, come on. Like,
is she a good actor?
I don't think she's been given the chance. 2 Fast and the Furious movies and 10 minutes in Batman v Superman is not enough for me to judge. I haven't seen her comedic action movie stuff she's done because I think she was in Spy or a movie like that. Keeping Up with the Joneses, I think she was in. So I haven't really seen her in any of that, but I think she can deliver.
Well, I saw her as like the rich Russian wife in 999. I saw her in Criminal. She hasn't really had any like big roles where she's been like the main.
Yeah.
Character.
This is a big shot for her, but if anyone can do it, Patty Jenkins gave Charlize Theron an Oscar. I don't think many people thought Charlize was ever going to win an Oscar. And I don't know, people can go into negative. People were negative going into Guardians. I want people to go into being Wonder Woman like negative so you can get your mind changed where everyone's going into Guardians positive. You know you're going to have a good time. I want that movie to just break expectations because that's all I want.
I think Wonder Woman is going to be good. The only thing I worry about is what happened with Suicide Squad, where they get to the end of it and then some giant monster comes out. Like, if Ares becomes this giant monster at the end, then the DC extended universe is going to have a giant monster problem.
Yeah, I don't want a blue beam of space, and I want him to stay. Ares should be bigger than her, but like more. He should just look like a badass general. Like the photo. I mean, the toy that came out for Ares looks amazing. His look will look great. I just don't know what his scale is going to be.
And that will be interesting. And that was, I went to Emerald City to pick up my comics on Friday, and I just happened to just run into TM as he was like filming his stuff. But we ended up going through everything. We talked about Star Wars, talked about that. But he also did mention that like there's a blue beam issue in films now too, where everybody's shooting a blue beam into space.
And like even in a movie like Suicide Squad didn't need it. Yeah, a lot of the Marvel movies have it, so we'll see. That's something I avoid it, please, Wonder Woman and Justice League and Spider-Man Homecoming. Like, no more blue beams this year, guys. We're done. Let's retire it after last year.
And Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is in space, so if there's a blue beam in space, it's fine. But, like, coming from a planet into space is where there's an issue.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just so they did it in the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's so cliched by now. I think filmmakers are starting to notice the complaints.
But do you not like the swirling clouds around the blue beam?
I don't like anything. I don't like the debris cloud that's usually around it. I just I think Man of Steel had a really nice version of it because it was more of the terraforming and how it worked. That was kind of a different version of it, so that was okay.
I think it's it probably some special effects guy has it like stock footage where he can just turn it into every other film. Like it's like, oh, call Steve. He's got the blue beam format, and like he just like Steve emails it over you, and then you just kind of retcon it for your film.
Yeah, you just like copy and paste it into your thing. It's just the easiest Photoshop.
I'm really excited about Guardians of the Galaxy next Tuesday. I'm really pumped for it.
I'm upset that we saw it so late compared to other critics, but I'm excited for it. I'm not promising I'm gonna love it or hate it. I'm gonna go into it as open-minded because look, I'm being positive. So anyone who's listening that I've hated MCU stuff before, I'm not that mean right now.
I'm going in like crazy style for this one because like Rocket's going to be in it and Baby Groot and Rocket's going to make a bomb. I mean, like seriously, like you had me at bomb and Rocket. Like I'm good.
You had me at that one scene in that trailer when it was just like, I am Groot. Mm-hmm. I am Groot. I am Groot now. I was there from that scene on. Like, as much as it gets the worst, I'm going to pay attention to them too and just love them.
I hope that all the stuff we've seen in the trailers, like the big lizard and the bomb stuff, is right at the beginning, so we just get an original film. Like, they knock that stuff out in the first like 20 minutes, and then the rest of the film is just all original stuff that we haven't seen, because I really like the excitement of like seeing new stuff. Like, we knew that the Hulk was going to be in the Thor trailer, but Thor movie, but we didn't actually. Did you need to see him?
No. I think that was just there for that really nice, like, kind of like money shot at the end, and I think it was pretty unneeded.
Yeah, so now where that comes, you're like, oh, you know, the Hulk's going to show up. So you list that, so you missed that surprise, like the surprise that Chris Evans, that Thor had in the film, where he's like, hey, that's my buddy. Like, that should have been the audience reaction to that, but now we've already seen it, and so I'm hoping that like the nuke bomb and the meteor is like early on. The big lizard, I think the big slimy thing is going to be right away. I think that
has come out even early when that first came out. That's the start, kind of like their first mission.
Yeah.
To like kind of kick off, like, because they have to do it. I'm curious of like how much of like recapping they're going to do of like, this is who this person is. This is this person. I'm going to see how much of that happens.
Well, luckily James Gunn wrote the film, so we have some faith, because he just kind of like, he runs through things really quick, and I'm hoping that there aren't, other people that have kind of rewritten his script or have fingers on it. And I'm hoping we get a freer James Gunn out of the film.
Yeah, I hope Kevin Feige was like paying attention to like Infinity War while this movie was being made. So like, just keep him away, like, because every time he's just whispering like, yeah, but what about this? What about this in 14 movies? Let's talk about it now. And it's like, no, Kevin, stop. Like, that's why I think James Gunn was like, no, I got it. I'm good.
Hi, EJ. You have a good weekend.
You too, my friend.
Hey, Matt, we survived another episode. Oh, no!
Once again, there are several ways to continue the conversation after the show. Follow us on Twitter @monkeys_robots. You can look at all our silly photos on Instagram @monkeysfightingrobots. You can follow me on Twitter @MatthewSardo. My co-host EJ is also on Twitter @EJChristWithK. The biggest compliment we receive is when the subscriber number goes up on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a chance, we'd greatly appreciate a review of our show on iTunes. As always, the best way to listen to the show is on our website, monkeysfightingrobots.com.
Okay, Lunchbox, let's try this again.
There are so many people that made the 119th episode of Monkeys Fighting Robots a success. Special shout out to my co-host EJ Marino.
We didn't fight this week. Maybe we tiffed. But we didn't fight. I like it. We'll keep it up.
Jeff Shade is the creator of our amazing intros and outros. Jessica Wynn designed the Monkeys Fighting Robots logo. Are you a monkey or are you a robot? The staff at Visual Realm built our website and keeps us up running. To all my friends, family, and the interweb, thank you very much for your support. I'm Matt Sardo, and this is Monkeys Fighting Robots.